Welcome to the Health Tech VC. I'm Dr. Fiona Pathiraja and I'm managing partner at Crystal Galley Ventures, and previously I was a consultant radiologist in the NHS. On this podcast, you'll hear me in conversation with ambitious startups, outstanding investors, and visionary leaders in the health tech space. This week's guest is Dr. Lizzie Barclay, Medical Director of AI startup Aidence. Lizzie and I talk about her journey from frontline medicine in the NHS to working in a startup based in the Netherlands. We touch on Aidence recently being awarded a prestigious AI grant from NHSX, how Aidence are co-creating their products with radiologists, and how Lizzie is working with patient advocacy groups to make sure patients are more involved in AI, from inviting them to meet her colleagues at the Aidence offices to accompanying patient groups to the European Parliament in Brussels. Being former radiologists, we can't help also discuss what it's like to be a doctor in health tech, clinician perceptions of AI, and diversity in the tech space. So Lizzie, welcome to the Health Tech VC podcast. Thank you so much for being here today. Lizzie, please tell us a little bit about why you decided to take the bold step of leaving medicine and joining a health tech startup.
Thanks very much for having me on the podcast. I'll try and keep it brief, but as you can imagine, it was a huge decision to leave my clinical radiology training post. I certainly thought about it for a long time, and I think I was a little bit unlucky maybe at the timing that I joined the NHS. Morale in the NHS isn't particularly good and probably hasn't been for the last decade. And I think that probably had an impact on my experience as a junior doctor, lack of teams. So there's not that much support. And at a time in your career, early on, when I think you really need that support and guidance from seniors. But also, I think what I was always interested in was quality improvement. And where lots of people, I think, hated doing clinical audits, that was one of the things that I loved. And finding ways that healthcare system or pathways could be improved, looking for just small changes in departments. And then obviously I ended up also in radiology, which I got inspired to go into chest radiology. And I think if there'd been a way of doing just chest radiology, I probably would have done it. I think unfortunately the rest of radiology I was a bit less interested in. Then there was this opportunity. I saw obviously AI becoming more and more an opportunity. Certainly for radiology is a good place to start. And after a lot of thinking, I decided to take the leap.
That's really interesting. And I know from personal experience, it's a massive step to step outside medicine. It's really brave and it requires a lot of courage. So why specifically Aidence? What was so special about Aidence that you decided this is the company for me?
It was also a big leap for me as well, because I've grown up in a family of medics, but that's also a little bit probably why I've ended up in lung cancer and chest radiology. My mum's a respiratory physician and both my sisters were in general practice in the UK. So you can imagine that they thought, oh my goodness, what are you doing leaving the NHS? But I looked around, I looked at a few different AI companies, and I had done quite a lot of work in early diagnosis of lung cancer in the 4 years I worked in the NHS, and that was an area I was interested in, as I say, probably a bit inspired by my mum and growing up with her talking about respiratory medicine throughout my childhood. And then, I looked around and there was an option in the UK, but it worked out perfect timing because my partner also found a job in Amsterdam. And it was fate where actually Aidence had just secured their Series A round of funding. And I approached them, got in touch with them. I really liked obviously all I saw at first was their website, and I just liked what they stood for and the way they were focusing on one small area, doing it properly. I got in touch with them and started conversations with them, and it just ended up that I think it was a perfect fit for both of us because they were also looking to get someone with radiology experience and an interest in chest radiology on board.
And for people who are listening who are not sure about what Aidence actually is, what's the product and who is it targeted to?
So our first medical device that has, we've had CE certification for a couple of years now for our first medical device. So it's for automatic detection, tracking and volume measurements of pulmonary nodules on CT scans. So we've deployed, since we got the CE certification, we've deployed in over 20 sites across Europe and the UK. And that's both in certain areas, it's in lung cancer screening programs where they have that up and running. And then in other areas, it's in routine practice. So it can be used in both settings. In terms of investors, we got our Series A, as I said, just before I joined the company. So that was about a year and a half ago now. So we're currently working on the goals that we set out based on that funding round we're delivering at the moment. Obviously, COVID's had an impact on most people, I think, over the last 5 or 6 months. So we've also been applying for some grant funding to support us. And most recently, we've received this grant from the NHSX AI Award. So that will be starting soon. Lots of work from that.
Congratulations. Can you tell us a little bit about what that's all about?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so it's a really exciting program, actually. This is the very beginning of it. So I suppose we'll see how it evolves over the 3 years. So essentially, the government's put money into the NHSX to be used for AI and developing this AI lab, but also as a way of getting products like VITS, making sure that the NHS is happy with it from a clinical validation point of view, and then being able to help deploy it across the NHS. So essentially, the aim is to try and achieve more widespread adoption of AI, but also validate these in a clinical setting that's actually managed by the NHS themselves. So we've got funding to do three clinical validation studies. So the one in a lung cancer screening setting, and then there are two in a routine practice setting. And the purpose is we've already done our clinical validation study with the University of Edinburgh, and that's what helped us get C certification, but that was done in like a research kind of environment. So the purpose of this NHSX funding is more about seeing, does VITS actually have a positive impact in clinical practice? Does it help with patient outcomes? Are we picking up early cancers? Is it helping with efficiency? And that's what we're trying to get from actual use in clinical practice.
So it's really interesting that you've got people using it in Europe. I saw that actually Afidia, you have a partnership with Afidia, and you're using it in Europe through them. And then also you're in the NHS. Lots of people listening to us will be interested to know how you have managed to sell in Europe and also in the UK, because it's very difficult often to engage with the NHS, especially as a startup. So it'd be great if you could share some of your experiences around that.
I think since I've come on board in the company, a big part of my focus has been working with the NHS and trying to drive the adoption of the work we're doing into the NHS. And it's quite a complicated system, and understanding how, well, all healthcare systems work, I suppose, they all work quite differently. And the NHS itself is a bit of a minefield sometimes. So having had experience, being familiar with it, I think has helped Aidence getting me on board. So I think for us, what we did was focus on approaching the radiologists themselves. And again, I think it's helped because of my background in radiology. It makes it a little bit easier to start that conversation and speak the same language. And just seeing whether we can identify if there is an unmet need in their departments, and whether actually the medical device that we have is going to help with their unmet needs. It's going to help solve some of the problems for them. And I think it's so important to be completely open and honest about what some of the limitations are. And actually, there are some departments that I think maybe there isn't a need for our product, whereas I think there's other departments that I think could really do with it and see the benefit. So I think before COVID, we attended quite a lot of conferences as well. I was traveling around quite a lot. I think it's so nice to be able to meet people in person. It's definitely made it a bit trickier now that we can't travel with COVID, and trying to have those conversations over Zoom, you know, is can be a bit trickier. But at the same time, I suppose it also makes it easier to approach people in all different parts of the country. I think, as I say, just starting the conversation with the clinicians has been helpful for us, but also then knowing that if there is a need for our product, I think now that we've had experience, we've been able to help guide the clinicians on who they need to get involved from their trust, and understanding the procurement process, finding out whether they actually have budget for AI, and that's a massive issue, certainly in the NHS. I suppose there's been a bit of luck in it for us as well, because actually with the timing of the targeted lung health checks in the NHS, which are the lung cancer screening program, if people haven't heard of that. So that is a new program that's being rolled out initially in 10 sites across England, and then with the aim of hopefully going to a national lung cancer screening program. And actually in their protocol and how they have to, you know, been guided to set up that program from NHS England, there is actually budget to be used on AI. So I think we've been quite lucky that for once there is budget available for AI, which makes the conversation a lot easier.
Yes, from a radiology point of view, I know about the Nelson trial that's published in the New England Journal in early 2020. And of course, the European Society of Radiology have this position statement on lung cancer screening. So as you say, the context is very fortunate for you guys as well. But in terms of lung cancer screening in the UK, we're starting in 10 sites. How is Europe tackling that?
It's a good question. So back in November, I actually went to the European Parliament in Brussels with a patient engagement group called Lung Cancer Europe, who I've been involved with for about 18 months or so now. So it's like a charity that basically the idea is to get together all advocates, patient advocates for lung cancer, and also some clinicians and people like me involved as well. So we took it to Parliament level to say, look, there's all this evidence now that lung cancer screening does help save lives. If you pick up early cancer, then you can actually potentially cure it. Whereas if you wait until those patients are symptomatic, which is unfortunately what happens when there's no screening programs, then by the stage it's symptomatic, it's usually really advanced and not curable. That there was a drive, but as I say, that was back in November 2019. I know there are, I think COVID again has probably had a bit of an impact on that, because I haven't heard lots about it since, other than there's this statement that's been put out to advise different countries. So I think it very much depends on the countries themselves at sort of government level, what they're willing to fund and whether it's a priority for them. There are certainly, you mentioned AFIDEA, so actually there are certain countries across Europe that are doing their own almost pilot studies or trials of screening, and that's what we're involved in with AFIDEA. So that's in Hungary, Greece and Italy.
So just moving on a little bit to talk about AI, I obviously, as somebody who invests a lot in this area and deep tech in medicine, you know, I believe that AI can be a member of the wider multidisciplinary healthcare team in the future, sort of augmenting and clinic and helping doctors and physicians. What is your view on how physicians are perceiving AI, and are there any barriers to them accepting it?
Oh, that is a great question. Yeah. Yes, I do think there are barriers. I very much hope that we'll see changes in the way that the health tech industry is perceived by healthcare professionals, physicians, but also researchers and the public. To be honest, that's what I hope over the coming years, that's how it will evolve. Because I totally agree that I see a role for AI in across the multidisciplinary team. And I'd love to see health tech being considered part of the integrated care system. I've been quite lucky in my experience in my training, although I only worked in the NHS for 4 years. I've worked in primary care, I've worked in community psychiatry, of course I've worked in radiology in district general hospitals, teaching hospitals, and I've also worked in a specialist oncology centre. So I think I've had experience in most of the sort of end-to-end potential patient pathways, and there are roles throughout those pathways where AI and technology can really, I think, improve patient outcomes, but also improve the way that healthcare professionals work. So there's an exciting deep learning, machine learning technology, and that's things like this VICHEST and the detection and automated volume measurements and all of that we do with VICHEST. But to be honest, there's also the less kind of interesting side of AI, which I think is also just as important, and it's more like what I call intelligence software, and it's actually making sure that it's integrated into the pre-existing workflow.
But as a radiologist, we're not going to use things that are not part of our normal workflow, right? If it's on a different machine and you have to use a different computer, you're just not going to bother doing it. So the best companies will have this level of workflow integration where you're actually, everything is on the system that the radiologist is using.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think, and that's what we've started with. And I think it was the right thing. As I say, obviously I joined the company 3 years into it. And so they decided this before I got there, but they started on a small task, and making sure that's done, like you say, it's completely integrated into the workflow. So it's actually useful for a radiologist to use, and it's not only user friendly, you want to make sure that the way the results are presented is, you know, easy to understand. You're not providing them with a whole load of information that, let's be honest, isn't really that relevant. Like, great, a computer might be able to give you all these different figures and stats, but actually, what do you care about clinically? What do you need to know? Because what's going to help your clinical decision? And I would much rather give you two or three numbers or words than give you, I don't know, a whole page of stats and things I'm interested in.
Yeah, I've certainly seen that with lots of the AI companies that come to us looking for funding. You know, they haven't always engaged the radiologists really well. So what they're producing is very high quality output, but it's not always useful in the clinical setting. And that's so key, right?
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of my role actually in the company. You know, I think from the whole end to end of deciding, first of all, what we should be, what device is going to be useful in clinical practice. But then once we actually do decide to develop that device, exactly what it's going to look like, what results it's going to produce. I have a level of insight into knowing what would be helpful, but also I make sure I engage with clinicians and radiologists who are currently working in practice and find out, you know, what would be useful for them. And as we call it, co-develop these products with the radiologist and really engage them in the process.
And of course, one of the things that you will know as a radiologist, you know, is the idea that there's this huge demand pressure on radiologists. We can never scan enough. And now with COVID, there's this huge backlog of things. So we outsource lots of scans. And this is where AI could in the future be so useful. Obviously, I've read that the Aidence Vi Chest is being used as a second reader in places like Liverpool. Is that right?
Yeah, so for those listening who might not know what a second reader means, basically how it works in radiology at the moment for lung nodules is that you would have a single radiologist reading and reporting the scan. And so ViChest adds basically a second pair of eyes to do a double check on that report to see if any nodules were missed by the radiologist, which you can imagine, especially under the current pressures, the demands on radiologists and also the interruptions they often have and distractions and that sort of external, the external pressures working in a department. I think sometimes having that second pair of eyes can be very valuable for radiologists to make sure they haven't missed something. We have our CE certification to be a second or concurrent reader. It depends a bit on how radiologists want to use it. And I tend to, when I do training sessions with them to explain how it works, we've done it so that I think initially when people start using it, as you can imagine, radiologists want to gain a bit of trust in ViChest. So they tend to use it as a second reader and they'll be reading their scans, reporting their scans themselves, and then they'll check and see whether ViChest picked up what they picked up or also picked up anything additional. I think eventually as they get more confident and trust the AI more, they actually start to use it more as a concurrent reader so that the results will just be there for them as they're doing their scan. And they can toggle those results on and off, you know, however they like.
So also you talked about COVID a lot in the answer so far, and I looked on your website this morning and saw that you're saying that technology is one of the most powerful tools we hold in the face of COVID-19. What are Aidence doing around COVID-19 then at the moment?
We are also trying to do our bit to help during the pandemic. Back in sort of March, we weren't too sure, radiologists weren't too sure how useful imaging was going to be in diagnosing and managing COVID patients. So at the time where we didn't really know much about it, we thought we're in a position where our kind of expertise is in CT analysis using AI. So it's the right thing for us to do to change direction for now of what we're working on and actually try and develop something that's going to be useful for COVID. So we have been spending, as well as continuing to work on our ViChest pulmonary nodules, we've spent a lot of time working on COVID as well. We are developing a model. We've worked on our own annotator tool, which, so again, for those who might not know much about how AI is developed, so how it works or how we do it in the company is we need to get obviously a lot of scans. So for the example of COVID, we need to get a load of COVID scans from ranging from people who might have completely normal looking lungs to those that have small amounts of ground glass to those that have completely covered lungs covered in ground glass and consolidation. So you want a big range of the different appearances of COVID. Of course, they're all completely anonymized scans. And then what we do is we get radiologists, so experienced consultant radiologists to annotate these scans for us, to basically to label them. Because then the way we then develop an AI model is by the AI learns from these annotated scans. So it learns to recognize what actually is COVID and what's not. And then the idea being that then that will be able to do it, you know, very quickly without necessarily having a radiologist have to look at it first in future. So we're still in the process of developing it.
We've talked a lot about radiology, and it's interesting when you have two radiologists speaking, but I'm fascinated about how people choose their specialty in medicine, because actually often it's such a diverse field and people often feel really happy once they found their tribe. So why did you choose radiology as your specialty back in the day when you were choosing it?
I think that's exactly it. It's finding a tribe, isn't it? And I think whether that's finding a bit of a role model or a mentor. So I think sometimes there's a bit of luck in it. I have to admit, I didn't plan on being a radiologist since the age of 10 or something. It didn't really cross
me
my
neither,
mind.
Me neither.
So I actually ended up having a job in radiology as an FY2. It was my final job as a foundation year doctor, which was quite an unusual job to have. And you can probably imagine that I wasn't very useful as an F2 in a radiology department. But the nice thing about that was that it meant that I actually had time to do, as I was saying before, some of the sort of clinical audits and the quality improvement work in the department. And I ended up just getting taken under the wing of the chest radiology team in that hospital. And I did certain projects for them and worked did things in early diagnosis of lung cancer. And then they basically then taught me a lot about chest radiology. I learned a lot from them. And I think that's what really inspired me to go into it.
I think when you've left medicine as well, you'll often look back quite fondly. We talked a little bit about how you took the big step and left. How did your colleagues react to that at the time?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think everyone was very supportive, realized that it is a huge decision. I was worried that I felt guilty because you know what it's like. There's understaffed rotors, there's shortages, and then there's me leaving my job, which actually makes the rotor even worse for everyone else. And I felt guilty about that. I really did. And that was probably the thing that almost kept me in it for longer than maybe I should have stayed in it. I think the nice thing was from like seniors, from consultants, I did have a lot of support from them. And they said, look, there's a place for you if you want to come back in future. They knew that I had this huge interest in chest radiology. But unfortunately, in you know your earlier years of radiology training, you don't really get a say on what you do. You're just on that treadmill of taking exams, aren't you? So, you know, that's the bit I probably miss. I miss that. I miss learning things, doing CT-guided lung biopsies, those procedures, having that one-to-one teaching with a thoracic radiologist, showing me interesting cases and all of that. And I do miss that.
It's funny that you always mention thoracic radiology, where I'm like, actually, the best bits of radiology are beneath the diaphragm to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, as you say, not only you find your tribe in radiology, you know, you then find your subspecialty tribe.
Exactly. So then you moved from the UK to Amsterdam. How was that? Can you speak Dutch? How have you had to adapt to life in a new, completely new place?
Well, no, embarrassingly, I still can't speak any Dutch. And I've been here for 18 months, and that's really quite embarrassing, isn't it? I'm ashamed. Yeah, it's definitely had its challenges. I think, as you can imagine, you're setting up home in a country where you don't speak the language. I think the decision to move out here was actually not a big decision in comparison to leaving clinical practice, to be honest. I think I felt like I could do anything once I decided to actually just take that leap. I don't know if you've been to Amsterdam before, but the Dutch culture is an absolutely amazing city. In fact, I'd never been here before I chose to move here, which sounds ridiculous. Yeah, I know. It's got this great sort of outdoor lifestyle. Everyone cycles everywhere. I don't have a car anymore. I don't know, everything about it is great. And to be honest, everyone speaks English when they realize that you're not Dutch. So I think that's probably why that's my excuse for not learning Dutch yet.
have there been any cultural differences in the workplace that you've encountered?
Well, you know, weirdly, when I first joined Aidence, one of the first things, I think it was our CEO or one of the co-founders said to me that you'll have to get used to the Dutch way. We're very direct, which they are very direct, but from working in radiology, because I think of all specialties, well, maybe surgery is also quite direct. I've worked with people who are extremely direct. So I think I've been quite lucky that I've actually, there hasn't been any kind of difficult or challenging things about the new workplace. It's just been amazing. It's like being immediately part of a family. And I assume that's probably what it's like working in any sort of startup. When I first joined, there was only about 18 of us. And you're just immediately part of this family and you all have lunch together and stuff that I never had in the NHS. I felt like I was just a number, unfortunately, when I worked as a trainee.
You've talked about how it's like a family and how great it is in startup land. I found when I've been investing in a lot of these deep tech radiology companies that it's quite devoid of women. And that whole area seems quite lacking in women. Is that your experience too? Is this something you've noticed at all?
Yes, absolutely. And I'm all for advocating for women in health tech. I wish there were more of us around. Yeah, and I don't necessarily know why it is, because the women that do end up working in health tech absolutely love it. I hope we can maybe try and change that. Maybe it starts with interest even back in like primary school, doesn't it? Getting kids and, well, girls more interested in technology and in science. But yeah, I totally agree. There is a lack of women in health tech. And I don't know about your experience, but I found it actually quite hard to find the right place to connect with other women in health tech that aren't working in Aidence. And actually finding, sometimes I'll search online and just see if there's a conference or an organization that I should join. And then I find it a bit overwhelming. I never quite come away finding the group that I want or should be part of.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Maybe we should create our own group.
I think we should. because I've realized there's like on, you know, on social media and various platforms, clinicians and radiologists that want to champion AI. And then you see there's women who have a background in tech who are now working in health tech. But I just haven't found that many of us who are female clinicians that have left clinical practice and now work in health tech.
So I think diversity in health tech is so important because visibility really matters. And I think I've seen you on social media, on Twitter, on various different platforms. And you know, it makes me think, oh gosh, it's great. You know, Aidence have got a really strong female medical director, you know, with an NHS background. That's, you know, really wonderful. So visibility, I think, is, you know, really important. You'd wanted to talk a little bit about the future of health tech. So my own view is that the sector is digitized once and healthcare is time is now, it's unlocking now. And so for me, it's exciting to be an investor. It's exciting to be a founder and an operator in this space. What are your views about the future of health tech and where it's going to evolve in the next 5 years?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a really exciting area to be working in. I don't want to sound like the negative person here, but I am going to touch on what I think the current barriers are. And that's, I think, well, that's what I hope will change over the, you know, next 5 years or so. So data, which I know everybody talks about, but data is a huge barrier because I think going back to how I was explaining how you train an AI model in the first place, you need to have access to data, whether that's CT scans for COVID patients, but also the additional clinical data that you need to have maybe more of a useful tool at the end where you've got their age and comorbidities, all that information. And I appreciate that there's rules and regulations, there's consent and all of that. And I think one thing I'd like to see happen over the next 5 years is the public and patients having more understanding because we've educated them and explaining how AI works, and therefore they can help lobby for changing these sort of regulations. And yeah, of course, if they don't want their data to be used, there's always got to be an option that it isn't used. But I'm sure there's a lot of patients who would be very willing for their, you know, depersonalized data to be used if it's going to help improve healthcare. So I think that is a massive thing that I know that, again, NHSX, by the way, they don't employ me, so it sounds like they do, but I know they are definitely aware of this, and I believe that they're trying to build on this. And I also, this is partly why I really want to be more involved in some of these patient advocacy groups. So there's the Lung Cancer Europe one that I mentioned, and also Roy Castle Lung Foundation. based in the UK, and just probably because I also miss that patient contact as well, as I'm sure you probably do. Mm. And I think it would be nice to actually just, I've offered to have patients come into our office to actually show them around.
Oh, wow. That's really innovative. I bet that's not many AI startups do that.
Yeah, but I think, and not only for the patient to understand, or they don't have to be a patient, just a member of the public, but also for the techies that I work with, for them, I think sometimes, and I'm sure that's in all companies, they are sometimes a bit removed from what the end goal is. And if they've not worked in a hospital before and they've not worked with patients, I think it's really valuable for them to meet patients and actually really then see what their work is contributing to and how it can impact people.
Yeah, I think that's such an important thing that often we miss in AI startups, and you are very removed from the patient. So I think what you're doing there sounds incredible.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. It's a work in progress, as many things are. But yeah, so and then as I said earlier, I think the other thing I'd like to see over the next few years is, again, it's more the how AI or how health tech is perceived by the physicians and by the radiologists, the people who will be using it. And I think there is still some skepticism, and I can understand why, for those who maybe have bad experiences from previous older software that, like we said, wasn't integrated into the workflow and things like that, or maybe was a bit temperamental. So I do appreciate why that is, but I hope over the next few years that will no longer be an issue, and it will be seen as an integrated part of the pathway, and it's a given that we need AI to do what AI can do, you know, within its limitations. We get AI to do the stuff that AI is going to be good at doing, and we get the humans to do the stuff that the humans good at doing.
I agree with you, because there's a lot of worry about, is AI going to replace the jobs of radiologists? Is it going to harm patients? And actually, it's but often people realizing what AI can do, what it can't, and how it can enhance our lives as doctors, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's taken me, I've worked here now for 18 months, and I look back at 18 months ago and I hardly knew anything about it, even though I'd applied and decided I wanted to change career. But actually, realistically, I didn't know as much as I know now. So yeah. I do feel like it's partly my responsibility and our responsibility as former clinicians who now work in health tech to help educate current clinicians, or at least share our knowledge with them, but also get them involved in the development side or testing of things to make sure it actually is going to help their workflow and is going to help their day-to-day work.
Thank you, Lizzie, so much for coming. It's been such a great wide-ranging conversation.
Yeah, thanks so much for inviting me on, Fiona. It's been really nice to finally meet you over a phone call.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to the Health Tech VC. If you enjoyed it, please don't forget to subscribe on your favourite podcast platform. Also, head to the show notes to follow me and Crystal Galley Ventures on social media to keep up with the latest content in health tech and investing.